We're going to be in the book of Hosea. Here lately, we've been talking about the southern kingdom of Judah. The southern kingdom of Judah. We just left the book of Daniel, probably one of my favorite in the Old Testament. Love the book of Daniel. Sometimes you'll hear it called the... Sometimes people will say that's Revelation 1. Because there's so much prophetic in Daniel towards chapter 11 and 12. Some people will call it Revelation 1. Read Daniel, then go to Revelation. I've had some Christians come up to me, where do I need to read? Where do I need to start? And they'll say, do I need to start in Revelation? No, do not go to Revelation. I'll tell them, go other places. Why do you tell them not to go to Revelation? Because I'm still scared to go to Revelation myself. There's so much there. And I read the back of the book. You know what I found out? We win. If you're on the Lord's side, you win. Now, we'll get to Revelation, and there'll be some stuff along the way that I refer there. But tonight we're in the book of Hosea. What a man of God he was. We're going to talk about how God used him, the things that he faced. He faced more than... I don't see how he could have faced what he faced. But without further ado, I'm going to start in chapter 1, and I'm probably going to read the first chapter. The first 11 verses, or the entire chapter 1 of Hosea. It says, the word of the Lord came unto Hosea, the son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. So we see there what time period this is. The first four kings were the kings of Judah, and the latter were, as we see it, the kings of Israel. So the northern tribe there. The beginning of the word of the Lord by Hosea. And the Lord said unto Hosea, go take unto thee a wife of whoredoms and children of whoredoms, for the land had committed great whoredoms departing from the Lord. So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, which conceived and bare him a son. And the Lord said unto him, call his name Jezreel, for yet a little while, and I will avenge the blood of Jezreel upon the house of Jehu, and will cause to cease the kingdom of the house of Israel. And it shall come to pass at that day that I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. And she conceived again, and bare a daughter. And God said unto him, call her name Lo-Ruhamah, for I will no more have mercy upon the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away, but I will have mercy upon the house of Judah, and will save them by the Lord their God, and will not save them by bow, nor by sword, nor by battle, by horses, nor by herdsmen or horsemen. But when she had weaned Lo-Ruhamah, she conceived and bare a son. And God said, call his name Lo-Ami, for ye are not my people, and I will not be your God. Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured nor numbered. And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, ye are not my people, there it shall be said unto them, ye are the sons of the living God. Verse 11 says, then shall the children of Judah and the children of Israel be gathered together and appoint themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel. Okay, number one, I'm going to go through a few of these rather quickly. Hosea is the first book of what the Hebrews call the 12, or otherwise known as the Minor Prophets. There's 12 Minor Prophets, and Hosea is the very first book in the Minor Prophet section of the Old Testament. So you'll hear them referred to as the 12. Number two, Hosea was a prophet to the... Does anybody know which kingdom? The northern kingdom. The northern kingdom. He is a prophet to the northern kingdom, and his ministry lasted approximately 50 years. Some scholars would tell you a little bit longer. Some scholars try to push it out to about 70 years. But most scholars will hold to about 50 years. And he prophesied, or his ministry was around 755, 753 BC down to about 715. So about 755 to 715. And I don't expect y'all to remember that, but his ministry lasted until 715. So he seen the northern nation fall in 722. His ministry was still going on. But to understand a little more of the setting of Hosea, to give you a little more background, Hosea, the time period of Hosea, it is before Isaiah. Isaiah was a prophet to the southern kingdom. Now, we know he did some work towards the northern kingdom, but he was, I would say, Hezekiah's right-hand man. Hezekiah was a southern king. So this was soon after Hosea, that's when you'll see Isaiah, Micah, their ministry will start up. But Amos, if you know anything about Amos, Amos was a prophet to the northern kingdom. His ministry at this point is complete. His ministry is complete, and this is where Hosea picks up. Okay, the theme of the book is God's steadfastness love for Israel in spite of her continued unfaithfulness, vividly depicted by Hosea's marital experience. And if you know anything about the man Hosea, you know his situation, or his the situation with his wife. But I want you to notice, if you remember back when we were in Jeremiah, God commanded Jeremiah pertaining a wife. What do y'all remember what God's commandment to Jeremiah was about a wife? He said, do not take a wife. Do not take a wife. Don't have any children. Jeremiah was getting ready to face, and we know that he faced the fall of the southern kingdom by Nebuchadnezzar, or the kingdom of Babylon. God said, do not take a wife. So Jeremiah did just that. He did not take a wife. He did not have any children. I guess 2 weeks ago when we was in the book of Ezekiel, do you remember what happened to Ezekiel's wife? God took Ezekiel's wife. God took Ezekiel's wife by a stroke. I don't understand. It's not for me to understand either. God's holy. God's righteous. He knows what He's doing. God took Ezekiel's wife with a stroke. Now, we could get up here and we could talk about why we may think that way, why we may not think that way. But I can say one thing. God knows what He's doing. Jeremiah, don't take a wife. Ezekiel, I'm taking your wife. But the command to Hosea was much different about a wife. In verse 2, the beginning of the word of the Lord by Hosea, and the Lord said unto Hosea, this is the very first thing that God commanded Hosea to do. Go take thee a wife. Oh, that's wonderful. He says you can have a wife, but he tells her where to go get her. Or he tells him where to go get her. He said, go take you a wife of whoredoms. What? Why would Hosea do that? Why would God command to do that? You see, and as we go through this study tonight, you'll see that a little more vividly as we go, but God told Hosea, He said, I want you to go out there and get you a wife. He said, I want you to go get a harlot. He said, I've got something I want to teach you and something I want to show the nation. But the theme of this book is the continued unfaithfulness. And we see that in this marriage here. Number four, Hosea can be compared to, sometimes you'll read them compared to Jeremiah. Jeremiah was to the southern kingdom. He warned his people on up until after the fall. And he seen the fall coming. So did Hosea, but of the northern kingdom. Hosea said, okay, God. He went and got him a wife. He found a woman by the name of Gomer. He went and took Gomer. And we see in verse 3, notice it says that she conceived and bare him a son. Whose son was this? We believe this was Hosea's son. This was, in fact, his son. Bear him a son, looking at the way it's worded. And God told them to name that son Jezreel. Name him Jezreel. The word Jezreel means may God scatter or may God sow. Now, in that same verse, he says why to name him that. He says, for yet a little while, and I will avenge the blood of Jezreel upon the house of Jehu, and will cause to cease the kingdom of the house of Israel. Now, if I don't want to spend a lot of time explaining what he is talking that about, but if you want to jot this down, to get some background of exactly what he's talking about, if you go to 2 Kings and you look at the life of Jehu, I believe it starts in chapter 9, but this specific instance that he's talking about is in chapter 10. But Jehu's ministry, a king to the northern tribe of Israel, was all of them were wicked king. He was a wicked king. You can go see what it was he did for God and what it was he did that was not pleasing to God. But you can go back to 2 Kings chapter 10 and see exactly what that is that he's talking about. He led the children in idolatry worship and shed some innocent blood and some things of that nature. But verse 5, it says, And it shall come to pass at that day that I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. We know that verse 5, he's talking about the coming judgment upon the nation of Israel. But many of y'all know the last three words, the valley of Jezreel. Y'all have heard that before. You might have even heard it called the Valley of Megiddo. It's the same valley, or the same location. A couple members of my family, my pastor, in December 2019, they went to Israel. They had the opportunity to go to Israel, and they come back, and I was looking at their pictures, just going through it, and it's a beautiful place. I hope, Lord will, one day me and my wife will get to go. But as I was going through the pictures, a lot of pictures, I'd say, where's this at? Where's this at? Where's this at? And they'd have to think for a few minutes because it was, I mean, hundreds, thousands of pictures they take. And I come across this one, and it's like they was on the side of a mountain. And over their shoulders, it was this beautiful, luxurious valley. It was absolutely beautiful. Green. Just beautiful. Probably one of the most beautifulest pictures that I've seen of modern-day Israel. Outside the temple and the temple mount, some of those things there, but it was just beautiful landscape. And I said, what is that? And she said, that's the Jezreel Valley. And like I said, one of the most beautiful places I've seen in a picture, but we know that the Valley of Megiddo or the Jezreel Valley, it's also a famous place well known where the Battle of Armageddon will take place. It has a long and bloody history, and will have a similar future as the place where the last war will end. I mean, if you look all through scriptures, this place is mentioned over and over and over and over. That is the same location as we know it to be where that last battle is going to be taking place. Number six, it says, or verse six, and she conceived again and bare a daughter. And God said unto him, call her name Lo Ruhamah, for I will have no more mercy. So we see Lo Ruhamah means no mercy, no pity, or you can see it sometimes, you'll see it unloved. She who never knew a father's love. But it says here in the scriptures, I will have no more mercy upon the house of Israel. And I will utterly take them away. Now, does that mean that because God said, I will have no more mercy for Israel, does that mean we serve a God that stopped loving? Absolutely not. He still is loving today as he ever has been. The Bible tells us God is love, but also just as much as he is a God of love, he's a God of wrath. They were told of this coming day. Hosea is still telling of this coming day, and God's telling them that the time's going to come that I'm going to have no more mercy. And if you see, when we get to their third child, or the third child that's here now, Lo Ruhamah, that is, as far as we know, that is a child that was conceived in the lifestyle that she chose to live. That was not Hosea's child, as well as Lo Ami. Lo Ami, it means not my people or no kin of mine. Not my people or no kin of mine. Lo Ami, if you you can find that in verse 9, how to spell it. Then God said, call his name Lo Ami, for ye are not my people, and I will not be your God. At 7:51, I'm going to try to get through these latter three quickly. Chapter 2, verse 1 says, say ye unto your brethren. Does that say Lo Ami? There's no lo there. Lo is a negative connotation. It means no. Lo Ami was not my people. So drop the lo. He's saying, say ye unto your brethren, my people, and to your sisters. There's no lo Ruhamah. And to your sisters, mercy or pity. Plead with your mother. Plead, for she is not my wife, neither am I her husband. Let her therefore put away her whoredoms out of her sight and her adulteries from between her breasts, lest I stripped her naked and set her as in the day that she was born, and make her as a wilderness and set her like a dry land and slay her with thirst. Verse 4 says, and I will not have mercy upon her children, for they be the children of whoredoms. For their mother hath played the harlot. She that conceived them hath done shamefully. For she said, I will go after my lovers, and give me my bread and my water and my wool and my flax, mine oil and my drink. Therefore, behold, I will hedge up thy way with thorns and make a wall that she will not find her path. Verse 7 and 8 says, and she shall follow after her lovers, but she shall not overtake them. And she shall seek them, but she shall not find them. But shall not find them. Then she Then shall she say, I will go and return to my first husband, for then was it better with me than now. Verse 8, for she did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal. Now, the second chapter here, number 6 on your paper, the second chapter here concentrates on the wife. Talks about the wife, and the wife is also referred to as the nation of Israel. God said, Hosea, go find you a wife. Okay, Lord, but go find you a harlot. One of the whoredoms. So he got her doing exactly what God told him to do, and she still chose that lifestyle. We see that she's continuously worshiping that lifestyle. She's continually going in that lifestyle. And no doubt the emotions that Hosea is facing would be heart-wrenching. I imagine his heart probably feels like it's been ripped out of his chest. But you see, he had forgiven his wife in that relationship that she had when she had the first child. Well, then she come up again and conceived again from a whoredom, she conceived again from another relationship outside the marriage. And two times he pleaded with her, but of no avail, she wouldn't listen. She went back to what it was she just was so drawn to. And I wonder if Hosea felt just a little bit of what God felt like. What do you mean, Zach? Hosea was giving her everything he could. He was being faithful to her. He was taking care of her. He made sure her every need was met. Everything that he could give her that she would want it, he done just that. But yet now she kept going back. My, my, my. That sounds a lot like you and I, don't it? God pours out His blessings on us. He gives us more than not we just need. But I guarantee you, if we was to look around this room, no matter the status of your bank account, your house, if you was to be honest, there's probably nobody in this room that does not have any of their wants been answered by the Father. He gives us so much more than we need, but we keep going back. We stand around and wonder, how in the world does this nation, America, get in the status of the place that it is? What's it going to be like in 5 years? Look at how much has changed just in the last 5 years. What's it going to be like in 2025, 2026, 2027? That's not that far away. See, God's blessed us. And why are we so blessed? Why do we as Americans, I'm going to say, why do we have it made? Well, bless God, you don't know the lifestyle that I live. You don't know how hard. No, I don't. But I'm going to tell you, we have been blessed. And it's not because we can get out in the field and we can grow corn. We can get out in the field, we can work, we can get out there, we can do this. No, it's not what we can do. It's how the Father's blessed us. But yet not, with each passing day, people turn away from God. Sad to say, but a lot of Christians start turning away. They stop forgetting how thankful we should be for what we have. God pours out the blessings on us for us just to turn our backs and go back to our all fleshly desires. He loved her. However, she kept going elsewhere to find temporary satisfaction. You and I are the same way. You and I are the same way. Just like when we come up here to pray. When we come up here to pray, yes, we may be here at the altar. We may be on steps. Over here, when we come up here to pray, who are you praying to? Do you really believe God can answer your prayers? Sometimes we sure don't act like it. How dare you say that about me? I'm talking about me. Sometimes I wonder if my prayers don't get answered because I have a little doubt in my own mind. God, I've prayed about it for years. You ain't answered it now, but it sure would be nice if you'd answer it. We need to get real. We need to understand the God that we serve, that we freely get to serve. Some people look as being a Christian as a job or an obligation. And if you feel that way, you might need to check up. God allows you to serve Him, to worship Him. I don't deserve for His name to come off of these lips. Some of the things that run through my mind, I don't deserve to hold His Word. He blesses us. Verse 8 says, "For she did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil." That I gave. He said, "I give them." And they turn right back around and get used for idolatry worship. My. God, it sure would be nice if you could put a few thousand dollars in my bank account. It sure would be nice if I could afford that new car. It sure would be nice. I've been eyeing that thing for quite a while. It sure would be nice if I could end up having it. But you know what? I'm thankful that there are some things that God allows me not to have because He knows He would draw me away from Him. Sometimes we pray amiss. I don't mean to get off on that, but chapter 3, it's 5 verses. "Then said the Lord unto me, Go ye yet, love a woman beloved of her friend, yet an adulteress, according to the love of the Lord towards the children of Israel, who look to other gods and love flagons of wine." I'm over my time here. The second chapter concentrates on the wife. The third chapter concentrates on the husband. There is I'm going to call them biblical movies. I like watching Bible movies. And I like checking to see if they're really accurate as I'm watching them. A lot of the new ones are not even worth watching. There was one on Hosea. You remember what it's called? Amazing Love. Is that it? Amazing Love. It done a pretty good job portraying this story or this historical account. So if you want to, you can go check it out. I'm not going to say everything's 100% accurate, but it wasn't bad. But in that movie, and as I started digging in here, it got to the point I couldn't imagine what it was, the emotional stress that Hosea was under. His wife wanted to have nothing to do with him. Nothing at all. And he kept turning to God. "God, why am I having to go through this? Why do I have to face this? Why, God, why?" And he couldn't understand. Chapter 3, "The Lord said unto me, Go yet, love a woman beloved of her friend." He says, "Hosea, I want you to love her. Hosea, I'm not asking for you to understand. I want you to love her. Love her." Verse 2, "So I bought her to me for 15 pieces of silver and for an homer of barley and a half a homer of barley." Hosea ended up, I'm sorry, not Hosea, Gomer ended up in the lifestyle she was in. She ended up on the block being sold as a slave. Nobody wanted her. Society didn't care. They used her. They was done with her. They didn't want her no more. She was on the auction block. Does anybody in here know what the typical price of a slave is? 30 pieces of silver. 30 pieces. Wait a minute. What did he buy her for? How much silver? She was half price. Nobody wanted her. Nobody wanted her. 15 pieces of silver. Hosea, I want you to love her. Hosea, I know that's your wife. And I know she didn't want to have anything to do with you, but now she's got off in a land. She's got off on a trail and a path that she can't come back from. But I need you to go get her. And when you get there, I need you to buy her back. Where was you at when the Lord come found you? Boy, I was in some muck and some mire. Some of y'all no doubt could have been at the lowest point of your life. And God didn't spend 15 pieces of silver for you. Not even 30. But He emptied out glory for your soul. He sent the best of the best to pay for your soul. Hosea wasn't a rich man. And no doubt what he gave to buy her back costed him greatly. Maybe not everything. He might have had a little bit left. But he knew the impact on his pocketbook of buying her. God gave everything for your wretched soul. God gave everything He had. Y'all have heard me say it, and my mind is boggled that He didn't create a being. Brother Jesse, the Bible says He spoke things into existence. That's the power that He has. He could have spoke something into existence and used that created being to redeem us. But no, no, no. No, no, no. It wasn't good enough. He said, I'll send my son myself. He'll die for you. No matter how far you've got away, no matter where you are this afternoon, God has paid for your soul. God has paid for your soul. Go to chapter 13. And as you flip in there, Gomer was 15 pieces of silver. She wasn't worth it. Neither am I. Neither am I. Chapter 13 is where we're going to find the answer to number 7. Number 7 says the first three chapters shows up the tragedy in Hosea's home life. It was a disaster. In the remaining chapters, we see the tragedy of Hosea's, not home life, but homeland. Verse 13 says, chapter 13, verse 1 says, when Ephraim spake trembling, he exalted himself in Israel, but when he offended in Baal, he died. Verse 2, and now they sin more and more, and have made them molten images of silver and idols according to their own understanding, all of it the work of the craftsmen. They say of them, let the men that sacrifice kiss the calves. Therefore shall be as the morning cloud, and as early dew that passeth away, as the chaff that is driven with the whirlwind out of the floor, and as the smoke out of the chimney. Yet I am the Lord thy God from the land of Egypt. And thou shalt know no God but me, for there is no Savior beside me. Over and over, they've been warned. Over and over, Hosea himself has warned the nation of the coming judgment. And they're being told one more time that He is the Lord, the God that brought them out of Egypt, and that there's no God or no Savior other than Him. Number 8, in the chapter 14, Hosea gives one final plea to the nation to return to the Lord. Verse 1 and 2. O Israel, return unto the Lord thy God, for thou hast fallen by thine iniquity. Take with you words and turn to the Lord, say unto Him, take away all iniquity and receive us graciously, so we will render calves of our lips. Hosea tells them yet one more time, please just turn. Please just turn back to God. He pleads with them, but we know they still do not listen. See, we serve a good God. And you hear me a lot, and you will continue to hear me say that there's nothing that catches Him off guard. He knows everything. We read tonight in chapter 1, verse 6, where He said that that He will have no more mercy upon the house of Israel. He says, but I will utterly take them away. Now, this is Hosea writing it down. This is well before the northern kingdom fell. We know the northern kingdom fell in 722. But it says in verse 7, but I will have mercy upon the house of Judah. He said, the northern kingdom's going to fall, and I'm going to let it. The Assyrians are going to come in, and it's going to overtake them. But then Hosea prophesied right there, some 250 years later. He said, the same Assyrians is going to overtake Israel. They're going to go knocking on Judah's door, going to try to threaten them. And I'm going to show mercy on them. He said, I'm going to take care of them. He said, but I'm not going to take care of them with sword. I'm not going to take care of them with might, with horsemen. And we know, if we was to open up the historical account, that they come in Hezekiah's day, knocking on them and telling Hezekiah, we're going to take you and your God's not going to save you. Your God ain't going to do anything for you. Hezekiah takes that letter and he spreads it before God Almighty and he starts pleading with the Father. And that night, God delivered them. All of the enemy that had that nation surrounded, God killed them all. Nobody lifted a bow. Nobody lifted an arrow. God took care of every one of them, all 185,000. How did He do it? With an angel. I'm telling you, the God we serve is a wonderful God. God with all that power. And He loves you. And He loves me.